My fellow plebs, River is setting a new standard in Bitcoin. At river.com, you'll pay zero fees when you dollar cost average. Truly the best way to build your Bitcoin wealth. All Bitcoin at River is held in secure cold storage with 100% full reserves. There's no need to wonder what's happening behind the scenes. Your Bitcoin is your Bitcoin to withdraw at any time. Additionally, River lets you make Bitcoin payments via the Lightning Network, offers a Lightning integration for developers, and allows you to mine Bitcoin directly to your River account. River has a level of service that is unheard of in this industry, including phone support, private client advisors, and the ability to designate beneficiaries to inherit your Bitcoin wealth. River has become the premium name in Bitcoin that anyone can easily access. Sure, you have a place to buy Bitcoin, but have you tried River? See and feel the difference at river.com and the River iOS app, the preferred partner of Bitcoin Magazine. Over the last 5 years, the Bitcoin Conference has become the world's largest gathering of Bitcoiners. From breaking announcements and international media coverage to countless meaningful talks by thought leaders and industry innovators, we are excited to continue our drive for global hyper-Bitcoinization. From July 25th to 27th, 2024, we'll be taking the Bitcoin Conference to the city of Music and Freedom, Nashville, Tennessee. Join thousands of attendees for countless opportunities to learn, engage, and network across 3 days of pure Bitcoin signal. Get your tickets now for the best price at b.tc/conference. You are not going to want to miss what Nashville has in store.
Alrighty. Hey, everyone. It looks like we got everyone here. I'm just bringing Adam Swick from Marathon up on stage. First of all, I just want to make sure everyone can hear me today. Daniel and Adam and Chris, can you all hear me loud and clear?
Yep, we can hear you.
Cool. Loud and clear.
Gotcha.
Fantastic. Cool. Yeah. So first of all, guys, thanks for doing this. Really appreciate it. I know there's been a lot of conversation flying around Marathon's new pilot they launched with Nodal Power, talking about mining Bitcoin with landfill methane. And this is a drum that Daniel, who is joining us today, has been beating for a long time, talking about Bitcoin's ability to swiftly scale to meet the methane mitigation needs to keep us on track with certain global warming targets. So I think we're going to, you know, what we're going to do today is just talk about, first of all, this pilot project that Marathon has announced. And then we're also going to just talk about mining with methane more generally. First of all, you know, why this methane can't be put to use elsewhere, and also why Bitcoin mining is such an ideal use case for this methane. And then as well, we're going to kind of just open the floor up a little bit more to talking about kind of what the market dynamic is for Bitcoin and energy, especially in the context of the halving. And as I think many people in the audience here know today, is that energy costs are one of the main sticking points for being a competitive Bitcoin mining operation. And so as rewards get cut in half with the halving for block rewards, I think, you know, people are going to be looking more and more at energy costs and how we can continue to drive those down. So all of that aside, I'm just going to introduce our guest today. So we have Adam Swick here, who is the Chief Growth Officer at Marathon. And Adam has been on the Bitcoin Magazine podcast as well, where we talked about a report that Marathon put out with Bitcoin Magazine Pro, talking about just this topic, which is cashing in on trash, how Bitcoin mining can be an effective solution to mitigating methane emissions. And really the key part about that is having this economic incentive to mitigate those emissions. And I think that's a unique thing we'll begin to talk about in this chat here today. And then as well, we have Daniel Batten here. And for people in the space, they're going to be familiar with Daniel's work. And he is the founder of a fund, CH4 Capital, and they focus on investing in scalable ways of mitigating methane emissions. And through Daniel's own work, he's, you know, realized that Bitcoin mining is one of the most readily scalable and cost-effective ways of mitigating methane emissions. So really excited to have both of these guys with us today. It's going to be a really good conversation. So without further ado, Adam and Daniel, how are you guys?
Yeah, doing fantastic. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, very good. Exciting stuff. Always something new in the exciting world of Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining. And this is top of my list.
Fantastic. Yeah, really looking forward to it. And Daniel, thanks for calling in. I know it's a little bit early for you over in New Zealand. But
it's 9 a.m. It's fine.
Okay, cool. Not too bad then. That's good. So the reason, Daniel, we brought you here today is, you know, obviously you're an expert in this arena, but you also were cited in this report that Marathon and Bitcoin Magazine Pro put together called Cashing In on Trash. I have that pinned up in the nest, I believe. Yeah, it's the second suite up there. But I think you know, if you could just do this for us, is just kind of set the stage, like, you know, what is this methane emissions problem, specifically from landfills, and why is this such an urgent problem that we need to solve at this moment in time?
Yeah, well, to set the scene, so I look at this as a technology investor and as a climate tech investor. And a couple of years ago, I was running my second climate tech fund, and I asked a dangerous question. I asked myself, are we actually making a real impact? And the answer was not that much. And the reason we weren't making a big impact was we were investing in technologies which were going to mitigate carbon emissions after 2030. They were using high-risk technologies that might have a 20% chance of being successful. And they were only reducing our carbon dioxide emissions, not our methane emissions. Now, the United Nations Environment Program has recently said that methane represents our strongest lever to reduce climate change in this generation. And that's because it's between 80 and 84 times more warming than carbon dioxide over a 20-year period. And yet very little has been done about it. In the sphere of climate tech, only 2 cents in every investment dollar goes into methane mitigation. So that's a big... And so I asked myself, well, what if we invested in technologies which were mitigating methane, which were having an impact before 2030, because this seems pretty urgent, and we're using existing tried and proven technologies? And I said, well, that sounds like a better idea. And that started me on a hunt where I started to see, well, where is methane coming from? And it's coming from three big sources: agriculture, the oil and gas industry, and landfills. And then off those three, if you start to track the relative growth rates of each, methane emissions from landfills is actually growing at a faster rate. So whilst technically it's the number three out of those three, if you factor in some recent calibrations of NASA satellite footage, which showed that we were underestimating our landfill emissions by a factor of between two and three, you factor that in, you factor in the growth rate, then landfill suddenly looms very large on the horizon as a major source of methane emission. And methane is our major lever to slow down climate change. So I started to look at landfills and work out, well, what's the best thing to do with that methane? Again, with a climate tech lens, where you're always looking at saying, how can you do this profitably? Where's the economic incentive to mitigate it? Because if you try to do it just through regulation, well, good luck in one jurisdiction, let alone doing it in over 160 jurisdictions worldwide in a coordinated effort at the same time. That's never worked in human history. So how do you do it through economic incentives? And very clearly, the best thing to do with it was to convert that methane, because methane's a power source, to convert it into electricity, and then where possible to sell that electricity to the grid. Now, the big problem was that in around 50% of cases globally, it wasn't possible to sell that electricity to the grid. Either government policy prevented it in some nations, but in most cases, it simply was going to cost way too much, decamillions of dollars, to perform that grid upgrade such that the grid could handle those additional, in some cases, megawatts coming back onto the grid. So then I said, well, you've got to have an on-site customer. Well, who's going to want to be on-site at a landfill? There's not many people. That's a pretty unique type of customer. Number one, they'd have to be location agnostic. And number two, it costs extra money to procure power from landfills. You've got to put in some cases, gas capture and collection systems. You need to invest more in generators. And the economics just simply do not stack up to make that additional capital expenditure unless electricity is a very high percentage of your operating budget. Now, who do we know who is location agnostic, who has electricity as a very high percentage of their operating budget? Well, I think we can all say we know the answer to that question.
That's a good question, Bitcoin mining.
That's Bitcoin mining. So suddenly I was going, hang on a minute, this Bitcoin mining that's been much maligned over the last few years for its ESG credentials could actually be the solution for how we mitigate our major lever to slow climate change on one of our major three sources, which is landfills, in the areas where it just hasn't been economically feasible to date. So it started to get very exciting. So that's why it's important. And that's why it's not easily possible to use solutions other than an on-site user of that power, and why it really doesn't stack up economically for users other than Bitcoin mining.
Yeah, that's very well said, Daniel. I think especially on those points of the transmission congestion. You know, there's just going to be a lot of difficulty getting transmission from for the electricity from the landfill to where there is a demand center. And as well as just like the difficulty of Bitcoin mining being so far out in the middle of nowhere, like there is really not a user for this electricity that exists. And if there was, it, you know, it would already be implemented in the marketplace. And as we see today, I think it's something like 50% of landfills in the US are simply venting their methane, meaning they're just letting it go right up into the atmosphere. And I think it's just a bit mind-boggling to think about how much energy is being wasted there. And if, you know, there was a buyer, say Bitcoin mining, that could come in and monetize that, I think it's just such a large economic efficiency that would that is now in play. But I think to kind of like give a little bit more color to this, Adam, I kind of want to give you a second to talk about where Bitcoin mining makes sense for landfills and where it may not. I think there are some limitations as to, you know, the market dynamics here. If you're going to build, say, a renewable natural gas pipeline versus mining Bitcoin on site. And I know that we talked about this a bit in our interview previously, but I just kind of want to set the stage a little bit with that as well.
Sure. Sure. And, you know, Daniel gave a great background from, you know, the landfill perspective, and it's almost a perfect marriage if we think about it from our side, Marathon, the Bitcoin miners' perspective. As we were sitting here saying, you know, we've got a hammer, where's the nail? And our hammer is things like exactly that. We're location agnostic, we're modular, so we can go up or down in terms of how much power we are consuming. We're interruptible, we're portable. And so where are places in the world, where are unique energy needs that only Bitcoin mining can solve? Because it's those unique areas where we can have A, the greatest impact environmentally, but B, it creates the biggest win-win for us in terms of finding the most attractive, you know, energy prices, and you know, making sure regulators and others are impressed with the space. And landfills came to the top of that list for that reason. In terms of which landfills are particularly interesting, you know, to greatly oversimplify a very complex subject is, you know, if you've got a large landfill with over 5 million tons of waste there, you're probably in a pretty close to an urban area. You probably might have the ability to invest and sell that electricity to the grid, or more importantly, more likely, is it might be worth it for you to invest the heavy initial upfront CapEx to be able to create renewable natural gas, which is another hot topic right now. And so, you know, I think the math works out for the best ROI for large landfills. At least it's an option, it's a decision for them of should I pursue creating this RNG, or should I sell electricity to the grid, or should I sell electricity to miners? And so they kind of have all the options. If you're big, if you're near a city, you can choose between those three. And so great that Bitcoin mining can be in that conversation and can be a bid to push these larger landfills to be the most efficient and be the best that they can be. However, what were the even better fit for Bitcoin mining, the no-brainer where Bitcoin mining is almost the only option, is all of these small to medium landfills scattered around. And this is, you know, it's basically half and half. Half are large and half are small to medium. And so these small to medium ones are usually in remote locations. They usually don't have the choice to sell electricity to the grid. The math does not pencil for them to create renewable natural gas. And so these were the ones often ignored in the past as just acceptance of that these are the problem landfills. These are the ones that are going to vent in the flare and end of option list for them. And so suddenly for Bitcoin mining to show up and say, actually, there is an option for these small to medium remote landfills, that's, you know, super exciting. And again, the likes of which they didn't have an option before. And now suddenly there is an option and a very attractive option at that. And so Bitcoin mining is a, in summary, a fit for all landfills, but, you know, basically one of the only choices for the small to medium remote ones.
Daniel, I saw you unmuted yourself. Feel free to hop in if you have anything to say there.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. And I want to add one nuance to that as well, which is that outside of the US, the penciling out for renewable natural gas projects doesn't pencil out as much of the time, which we found. We've done a global search of landfills, and we've found that in the US, there are two considerations with renewable natural gas projects. One is that the amount of purity you need in that natural gas is generally lower than it is in other parts of the world, which means that the amount of expense required to get it to a standard where it could be a strategic asset, such as natural gas, that you could resell, the economic burden is lower than it is in other parts of the world. And the second is that there are subsidies for these renewable natural gas projects in the US. So what that means is that Adam's absolutely right, that it tends to be a potential use case in more of the cases in the US. Outside of the US, what's interesting is when you don't have those subsidies on renewable gas projects and when there's a very high purity requirement on those RNG projects, they don't pencil out as much of the time. And so it tends to be more of a bifurcation between either you sell it to the grid or you do Bitcoin mining with it, which is fascinating because we're also looking globally at a number of locations. And what we found is that some of the, even the slightly larger landfills outside the US would make sense, whereas inside the US, it may make in some cases economic sense to do an RNG project. So that's the only nuance that I'd add to that.
Yeah, and you made me think, completely agree, Daniel. You made me think of one other thing, which is interesting, is a time component, is there are some of these landfills that might be well geographically positioned to sell electricity to the grid, but you know, especially here in the US, and I'm less informed outside, but in terms of the waiting time to be able to sell electricity to the grid, is we've heard stories of landfills saying, you know, it's going to be 4 to 5 years, get on the wait list, just like all these wind or solar farms, and then you'll be able to sell. So there's an interesting potential there where perhaps the Bitcoin miner shows up and says, yeah, we'd love to take the electricity for the first 4 to 5 years. And when you're allowed and abled and you're through that line to sell it to the grid, great, the Bitcoin miner can pack up its generator and its containerized miners, and hopefully they built the site with planning to move 4 years later. But there's a world where it's like filling that time gap as well. So it's where you are, it's how big you are, it's time, it's a lot of things to consider.
Which I think is a really good point, because we've already seen, and you've alluded to it just there, that this is already starting to happen with renewable projects where the Bitcoin mining company will be the first off-taker for that energy, such as you may have a solar farm which is struggling to get a grid interconnection. But if they have a first off-grid off-taker for that power, then that makes them economically viable. It makes them more likely to get financed. It makes it easier for them to get onto the grid and be a going concern when they are. So we could easily see something very similar for landfills. And that's exciting because that's Bitcoin, as you're saying, Adam, quite correctly, which is playing a catalytic role where it's not necessarily the long-term citizen at that landfill, but it can kickstart a project, a power generation project, which otherwise would not have been viable due to those large interconnection queues, which are only getting longer.
Yeah, that's really well said. I mean, I just think of Brandon Quittam's work. He's just written so well about the symbiosis between Bitcoin miners and electricity production. And I think that we're just seeing this, and this is a prime example of Bitcoin mining being able to bring more energy availability online. And it's such a wonderful thing to see. And before we progress a little bit further into the conversation on this topic of US-based mining versus internationally-based landfill mining, Adam, I wanted to pick your brain a little bit on the policy landscape right now. I know that there is regulation from the Biden administration talking about clamping down on methane emissions from U.S. landfills. How important is the regulatory response for incentivizing these landfills to take care of their methane emissions? And I think, you know, one way that you framed it to me before when we had our earlier chat was, you know, you're talking to these landfill owners and you're telling them, you know, do you want to pay to be compliant or do you want to be paid to be compliant, referencing the revenues they can get from Bitcoin mining. So all that to say, like, what is the importance of the regulatory landscape? And perhaps, Daniel, you could talk a little bit more about maybe the lack of regulatory landscape abroad and how that's impacting the market.
Sure. And so, you know, it's interesting because this is an opportunity for any landfill. And to be clear, make it sound easy, but you know, a lot of hard work goes into mining on a landfill. But one of the hardest parts is, you know, signing up the landfill and educating them about what's going to happen here. And a lot of just, you know, orange pilling the world is about meeting these people where they are. And at sometimes we use the word Bitcoin, sometimes we don't, in terms of just saying, hey, you can get paid to be compliant. And again, behind the curtain, we then say is all this Bitcoin mining. Other people don't care. They're just like, whatever, drop down your data center. And so all that to say, to answer your question, is it's about getting these landfills excited about the opportunity. And regulation is serving as sort of a forcing mechanism to make them look into it. And so, you know, if you're sitting there without regulation from your government forcing you to mitigate your methane emissions, this might be at the bottom of your list. You might not take the time to understand this crazy idea that people are approaching you with about mining Bitcoin on your landfill. But if you're staring down the barrel of this big expenditure that you might have not planned for, that suddenly you have to build a floor, again, you're maybe that, you're that small landfill out in the middle of nowhere that you thought you were just going to do nothing for the next several centuries, and suddenly, oh man, I've got to invest to become compliant. Those are the ones that are asking the most questions and naturally saying, is there a way around this? Is there a better solution out there? And they're looking for innovation, which, you know, Bitcoin mining as a solution is that answer. You know, kudos to other landfills that are proactively asking that question. But a sad reality is too many landfills are forced to think into innovation like this due to regulation. And I hope that having these conversations, writing these sorts of reports changes that. But it is a slight accelerant is the short answer.
Yeah, in any technology company, if you can find a regulatory lever that is forcing people to make decisions, then that's a good thing. So what's happening in the States right now, Adam's absolutely right, is totally going to drive behaviors where landfill owners are saying, what? I've got to invest $1 million, multiple $1 million for multiple flare stacks to flare all of my methane, and then I've got to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars every year to maintain them. And then a Bitcoin mining company comes along and says, well, there is an alternative, which is we pay you for the power that gets generated because we turn what's a form of pollution and an environmental liability and just about to become a balance sheet liability through the capital expenditure you're going to have, and we can turn this into an asset and we'll pay you for it. So it's kind of a no-brainer. And this is going to drive a lot of landfill owners to start looking at other options that are better than simply paying to waste that energy.
And that's where the real fun begins too, in terms of, for all the big Bitcoin fans on the listening in, is the potential for kind of educating folks on Bitcoin and introducing them to the world. Is there is a subset of the landfills, as I mentioned, who during these conversations, you know, they don't want to know much. They just kind of like, whatever, if it's money coming in and not money going out, sounds good to me. But then there are the landfills, most of them, I would say, are asking questions and saying, now, what exactly are you doing? And how does it work? And again, there you can kind of take them down the rabbit hole and present them with some options. Is, hey, you've got this methane that helps us create electricity to mine Bitcoin. We can pay you a flat dollar amount for that if you don't want any exposure to Bitcoin. Or if you're excited by this new world of Bitcoin, you know, instead of getting paid in dollars, you can get paid in Bitcoin, or you can get paid like a profit share, which, you know, is basically the same as getting paid in Bitcoin of the mining that happens. And you can kind of present those options. And the good news, which I can report, is it's a not zero amount of people that have said, actually, we're pretty excited about this Bitcoin thing and we'd like to get exposure via this.
No, I mean, that's certainly great to hear. And you guys are already on your end kicking this process off with your pilot announced with Nodal Power. So Adam, could you tell us a little bit more about that? I know like a couple of weeks ago when we released this report with Marathon via Bitcoin Magazine Pro, all about mitigating methane emissions from landfills with Bitcoin. In my head, I'm thinking, you know, why release this report now? And then, you know, last week, obviously, Marathon announces this pilot project with Nodal. What can you just tell us a little bit about that project, and then as well fill us in what you hope to learn from that?
Sure. And so obviously, as a big public miner, we're constantly looking to improve our operations, constantly dealing with the unknowns of Bitcoin price, global hash rate halving approaching, And so we're really focused on two sides of the coin. One is doing something with the heat that the miners generate, heat reuse, you know, finding that heat greenhouses, grow shrimp, all that exciting stuff, heat communities. On the other side is how do you get to drive down your power cost? As Daniel mentioned, the biggest variable cost we have is our power. And so how can you drive that down? I think the days of just showing up to a large utility or energy generator and saying, hello, I'd like to buy some power, are gone, because that is not the way to get the most competitive energy prices. The way to get the most competitive energy prices is to find these weird needs in the world where you can create a symbiotic win-win relationship, whether it be an energy generation demand mismatch, as we've seen in some foreign countries, or like we opened up talking about today, this weird problem we have where Bitcoin mining could be one of the only unique solutions. And so that is how this came on our list, is on our drive to try to find potential sources of driving down our power cost and finding unique places where, quite frankly, Bitcoin mining has an unfair reason to win, an unfair reason to be the solution for whatever problem is out there. And the cool thing about this is that, you know, this wasn't some technology that had to be built 10 years in the future. This was putting together a lot of things that we know how to do as a society. You know, we figured out how to take methane and turn it into energy. We figured out how to take energy and Bitcoin mine, and so you put these pieces together. And so this was not some far off thing, but instead something we could start doing today. And in the crypto world, in the Bitcoin world, in the Bitcoin mining world, where things move fast, I think we have a propensity to, you know, trial things sooner rather than later. And that's exactly what this is clearly got excited about it for the environmental reasons, got excited about it for the economic reasons. You know, quite frankly, Marathon is just a sum of individuals. And what gets us out of bed is doing cool stuff like this. And so all of those reasons led us to want to pilot something, get something running sooner rather than later. Nodal, awesome group of people that has been working on turning landfill methane into energy for quite a while now. And so kind of a no-brainer partnership early on to try to make this work. And so it's out in Utah. It's 280 kilowatts, and so small relative to Marathon's bigger scale. But in regards to landfills, I think most of the landfills that'll be a good fit for this will be, you know, 4 megawatts or smaller. They couldn't be bigger, but, you know, just ballpark. You're not going to have a 200 megawatt landfill methane site, but it's a great place to start. It was a way to get started fast. So roughly 90 miners plugged in there. We're about a month in. It's going, I think, exceeding our expectations in terms of operations. You know, uptime is exceeding what I expected, and I had high expectations. Operating costs are exceeding my expectations, and I had low expectations in terms of low operating costs. And so even lower operating costs than I expected. And so it's, you know, economically the best, the lowest cost to mine a Bitcoin site we have. And so that's the current status, and expect more great things looking forward.
Yeah, I just want to add something there, because whilst you're right, Adam, that it may have been a no-brainer to partner with Nodal Power, you'd be surprised how often this does not happen outside the Bitcoin ecosystem, which is you have a large publicly listed company who chooses to partner with a smaller company who's got some knowledge asymmetry. So I think it's a real credit, and it's something that we shouldn't lose sight of, is just how synergistic this entire industry is. And it's the nature of Bitcoin mining companies to look for these symbiotic relationships and say, hey, you've got some knowledge, can we lean on that knowledge? Can we work together in partnership so it's in both of our interests? This happens much more, I've found, from my experience inside the Bitcoin ecosystem than it does outside it.
So true. It's flexibility on all sides. And I'm constantly impressed by Bitcoiners everywhere, you know, down to, you know, funny stories. I don't know if this is exactly, if these numbers are exactly correct, but it was something like we had agreed on a pilot size and we started to palletize the miners to ship them over. And it was kind of like, we're like, oh, it would actually just be easier if we did this number of miners rather than this number of miners, because it fits on a pallet easier. Nodal, are you okay with this? And they're like, yeah. And so it's, again, a true, there's many other partnerships I've had in life where it was, you know, very much let's focus on the legal paperwork. be very nitty gritty, kind of treat each other as adversaries that are trying to come together and fight over pieces of the pie. Whereas this has been the exact opposite. This has been everybody recognizing, you know, that old adage is rather than fight over pieces of the pie, just work to grow together to grow the pie. And I mean, how perfect is that as a description of what we're talking about here? Like this pie doesn't exist today, but yet it could be such a big pie. And great that everybody understands that and therefore is on, you know, rowing in the same direction.
Yeah, and on that note of like how big of a pie this could be in the long term, Daniel, I know you spent a lot of time thinking about the long-term trajectory for the Bitcoin network's emissions, but also how much methane we can mitigate by using this technology of proof of work. So assuming this pilot goes well with Nodal, I want to try and open this conversation up to try to understand what scale mining Bitcoin on landfills could reach and what the impact of that might be. So I know that's a rather broad question. So maybe we start with Daniel. And Daniel, if you could just speak to some of the work you've done around modeling Bitcoin's emissions profile and where you see that going.
Yeah, sure. So if you look at the amount of landfill methane that exists globally and what we could turn into power generation, there is at least 17 gigawatts by my calculations of power available from landfills that would not have an economical use case other than Bitcoin mining potentially. So that's enough to power the Bitcoin network more than 1.2 times over based on where it is today. So there's more than enough landfill gas to go around for everyone. Now, there are some constraints upon how much of that comes online. The major constraint today has been Bitcoin mining companies' ability to get financing for these projects because they are niche projects. They don't typically fit into something that a venture capitalist will finance for the exact reason that Adam is talking about, and there's no novel intellectual property. This is existing technology that's been used, which is great because it can pick up and go, but it means that it won't get venture capital backing. And then traditional growth capital backing or banks, they'll look for multiple hundreds of megawatts potentially. And this falls into the gap. And so one thing we've done is said, look, in order to really proliferate this, there has to be a good marriage celebrant in the middle who's financing these sorts of opportunistic credit arrangements. So that's one thing. The second constraint is just looking at the economic drivers and making sure that landfill by landfill, it just makes economic sense. And so you need to look at a whole range of factors. And there's some interesting ones. So for example, we got very excited about Mexico until we realized that a lot of the landfills in Mexico at altitude, and at altitude generators don't run as efficiently, and that has a repercussion for your mining economics. And then you've got to look at, well, what's it going to cost to ship to different locations? And you put together all these different models and you build up a model, and very quickly you get a sense of which landfills are economical to mine and which ones are not. Obviously, Bitcoin price plays a big role as well. So the more Bitcoin ascends in value, the more suddenly that more landfills make economic sense to mine. And then the other equation we looked at is carbon credits, because if you're looking at landfills that are currently venting as opposed to flaring their emissions into the atmosphere, well, not only does that create 10 times more methane going directly into the air, massive quantities of methane, but also if you're mitigating them, then that's a legitimate form of carbon reduction because of the global warming factor of methane. And so that can generate carbon credits. And so you look at your models and you look at, see, okay, what can we procure that power for? What is our ancillary revenue source in this case? With us, with our fund model, it's going to be carbon credits. What can we expect that the amount of Bitcoin that's going to be mined? What's the price of that? What's the hash rate? You plug in all those numbers, and then you come up with the answers that make sense. And the other limiting factor, as Adam said, is just the number of landfill owners who are seeing that this is starting to get normalized. So when you're having to educate landfill owner by landfill owner, it's hard. And so that's why it was a great initiative to send out that report, because it makes your job easier. Now there's a legitimate report out there that's gone and done the research and shown that landfill gas mining, for Bitcoin mining, is a legitimate use case. And it's been done increasingly. There's now four companies in the world who's doing it, one in Australia, three in the US, and that's been doubling each year. It's early stages, but if we have eight companies doing it next year, that's all just adding more legitimacy, and that's normalizing this as a power use. And then we start to get data back, which is showing the carbon mitigation that that's occurring, and that again adds more legitimacy. And then it's like any new technological use case, it's not new technology, but it's a new application of a technology, that it starts to get more traction and people go, yes, this makes a whole lot of sense. And for all the reasons Adam said, it's incredibly cheap power, because going to a large utility and trying to negotiate versus finding these cheap sources of energy, as Adam said, where Bitcoin mining has an advantage because so much of the operating budget is electricity, that it actually makes sense to invest that capex, which means you don't have other users competing for that power. You don't have other people who can utilize that potential power. Just makes a whole lot of sense. So this could proliferate potentially very fast. So whilst it's very nascent now, we're talking about a small number of companies and we're talking about small pilot sites. That's how any new technological innovation happens. You start off with a pilot, you run it, you nail it, then you scale it, and then you start to do it at scale. So I see this could easily become, I don't think it's going to become the predominant power source of the Bitcoin network, but I could perceive a time in the future where 10% of all Bitcoin mining could be powered off landfills, quite conceivable.
Yeah, and it's exciting to see how quickly it will grow. And that was the hope of doing all of this, is exactly like Daniel mentioned, is putting a report out there so people can hopefully read about it. You know, trying to talk as much about this pilot as we possibly can so people hear about it. And, you know, learning by doing, because who knows, landfill owners, other landfill owners. And so as with many things in life, the hope is that this spreads very quickly, exponentially, as, you know, one landfill owner tells, you know, their two friends, et cetera, et cetera. And yeah, I think this is bigger than a lot of people expect, because in the past, when a lot of the traditional research in the space has been done, I feel like they focused on those large landfills that have the potential to sell energy to the grid and just ignored all the small and remote landfills, because what were they going to do with them? And so it's rethinking the entire possibility of how much methane can be mitigated. And again, landfills are a great near-term solution, and to Dana's point, hopefully make up a large part of the network, but I think it'll be decentralized and you'll see things like, you know, other regular flaring going on, biomass energy, and all of these sorts of narratives where it's the same, no competition for energy, this unique problem that Bitcoin mining solves, and therefore the economics line up, and that's where the Bitcoin miners flood to find those that cheap power. And it just makes so much sense.
And so something that I really want to, just for my own curiosity, I suppose, understand is how carbon credits interact with this market. Daniel, I know you did mention carbon credits not too long ago, but I'm kind of putting on my like adversarial thinking, you know, Bitcoiner libertarian hat, and I'm thinking, you know, these carbon credits offerings are oftentimes led by the public sector. And there is kind of a level of, state intervention into the market process there. And so from like the perspective of decentralization, is there any concern there? But also just on top of that, like, how do you think about the viability long-term of carbon credits and that market more generally? Is there any nuance that people should be aware of? It's something that I'm not very familiar with myself, but figured I would just put that out there.
Yeah, it's an area where I'm quite excited about, because it's one of the few examples across the world where an economic incentive that was created across numerous governments actually could work. And we've seen numerous examples of where government incentives have not worked or have created the wrong behaviors, such as large renewable projects built in the middle of nowhere, such as RNG subsidies, which make more sense, don't make sense in some cases because there's better use cases for that energy. But that doesn't mean that they never work. And there have been isolated examples in history where a group of people have got together and they've found a set of incentives and we've found a way to work them. And this is one thing that I have a lot of confidence this can happen with carbon credits. What's happened in markets recently is that the markets have crashed. The reasons they've crashed is that there was a whole lot of bogus credits claimed, on forests, which were not sequestering the carbon that they claimed to be sequestering. So kind of what happened in crypto markets happened in carbon markets, which was there were some projects which were revealed to lack the credentials, which they appeared to have on paper, and that crashed the entire market. Out of the wreckage, something again very similar has happened in carbon market, what's happened in the crypto market, and that people are getting more sophisticated and saying, hang on, not all crypto is the same. We have crypto, we have Bitcoin. Similarly, in carbon markets, people saying not all carbon credits are the same. We have forest-based credits, which have been historically very hard to measure, but we also have this thing called technology-based credits. And landfill gas power generation falls into this category very beautifully because unlike forest-based credits, you can, through telemetry and through software, you can measure minute by minute the amount of methane that would have gone into the atmosphere that you are now diverting to a generator to create power. That's not possible with forest-based credits. And so what we're seeing starting to happen at the moment is a bifurcation in the markets where these technology-based credits on voluntary carbon markets are starting to earn a premium. And the reason they're earning a premium is the companies who used to purchase these carbon credits in the past, their customers are contacting them and saying, hang on, you say you're carbon neutral, but I've just read this article in The Independent or The Garden or Guardian or wherever they've read it that says that these forest-based credits don't have legitimacy. How do you know that you're really achieving carbon neutrality? And they, in turn, are going back to the originators of these carbon credits and saying, hey, how do we know that these carbon credits are actually true and real and valid? So in terms of landfill gas mitigation worldwide, I'm bullish on Bitcoin, I'm bullish on carbon markets, and I'm bullish on energy. And we're seeing these three different thrusts coming together in parallel. And you believe that carbon prices are going to go up, Bitcoin's going to go up, and energy prices are going to get more expensive in the future. This is a fantastic sector to be in because you're looking for sources which are aiming, which are creating more legitimacy around the process of removing carbon from our atmosphere. So I see it working really well. And there's a second point I'll make as well, which is the private-public partnership aspect. Down the track is going to become more important. At the moment, where the Marathons of this world, Nodal Power, et cetera, rightly so, are going for the low-hanging fruit. And so are we. We're going for low-hanging fruit. We're not going to be targeting at as our next project an open-air dump in Mumbai, for example, for a whole lot of very good reasons, one of which is that it's not even a landfill. It's an open dump, and it doesn't even have the base infrastructure possible so that you can do gas capture and collection. However, there is no question that at some point in the future, Bitcoin mining could even target these super emitters of methane. But in order to do that, it's not going to make economic sense for Bitcoin miners, mining companies, or financing organizations such as ours to go in and try to convert that open dump into a landfill before you can even start a project. However, it would make sense for the government to invest at, say, 20-year treasury rates, or for the World Bank to invest, or for IDB to invest, to convert that dump into a landfill, and then for a Bitcoin mining company to then take what has been a converted landfill and do the final mile gas capture and collection. So these sorts of partnerships, I think we need to look very agnostic, landfill by landfill, and say, how do we solve a problem? I'm a pragmatist, not an ideologue. So I just look at things and say, hey, we've got some big problems. Sometimes we'll be able to do it through private enterprise alone. Sometimes we won't need carbon credits. Sometimes we will to make it make economic sense. Sometimes we won't need to partner with government. Sometimes it'll be a local municipality. At other times, we'll actually need to partner with government to make this project work. So let's look agnostically, landfill by landfill, to see what is the unique solution set such that we can bring profitable methane mitigation online for as many landfills.
And that's where it's interesting and an opportunity for governments is, you know, if you were to ask me of all the landfills in the world to stack rank them in terms of which ones I want to work with first is, you know, I think what I would say is give me the landfills with the steadiest stream of high methane content gas, because Great. Landfills have varying amounts of methane. You know, on hot days, organic matter will break down more and more methane will come out. And so anyway, that's how me, a Bitcoin miner, would rank them, because it would just make it easier for me if I had a nice steady stream of methane coming from the landfill. Notice what I didn't say is I didn't say me say, give me the landfills that are the biggest problem causers of pollution. And that is what the government might want to say. And so there are ways to bridge that gap, you know, by conditioning the methane coming out, having sort of generators that can accept some variation in terms of the methane coming out. And so maybe, again, that's a world where regulation and incentives and these credits start to make sense, is if the government wants me, or miners, you know, me in the broader sense, to focus on the biggest polluters, what are the biggest problems there? You know, an example is the purity of the methane. And so maybe credits start to come in there where it's worth us investing in these extra gas purifiers, where suddenly we now want to go after this big polluter that might not have consistent methane, just as an example.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think I'll just ask a naive question to both of you. When I think of Bitcoin mining, I think of waste heat. And also when I think of Utah and this new pilot project, I think of snow in the winter. And so, you know, maybe this doesn't make sense, but is there an opportunity to recycle waste heat from Bitcoin mining and put that back into the landfill to accelerate that decomposition process and thereby generate more methane? Is that something that is being explored, or is there a reason that is not necessarily economical to do?
Great question. I don't know off the top of my non-engineering head, but I mean, there is heat being generated. And so there are lots of things you could do with that heat, you know, whether it be greenhouses, whether it be heating any buildings nearby, whether it be trying to grow some sort of protein, or again, what you just described. I imagine there's a stack ranking of what is the easiest. I imagine there's a stack ranking of what makes the most economic sense in terms of numbers. But I mean, this is the fun of asking these exact types of questions, these what ifs, trying to do some rough modeling, trying to do small pilots, and then scaling up from there.
Yeah, I agree with that. I've been to one landfill where there was some heat recycling, not even from the ASICs, but just from the generator itself that was being used to power the water. And to heat up the water, it was used at a local greenhouse. So there are definitely things you can do, but it all depends on what other potential use that you have for that heat that's located at the landfill itself. In terms of whether you can cycle that back into the landfill, anything's possible in theory. It's just a matter of whether that's economically feasible, bearing in mind the engineering cost.
And it's, again, devil's all in the details of these things, is, you know, running a air-cooled mine connected to the grid is on the simpler side of things. You know, the electrical utility says, here's a plug, you plug in your miners, the fans spin, and you're done. You know, if you start to introduce immersion, it gets a little more complex. And, you know, this is, landfill mining is on the more difficult and therefore more fun side of things to do, because you have this generator aspect. And so you want to keep pushing the boundaries of what you can do without overcomplicating it. And so a lot of the solutions we've looked at when it comes to landfill mining, or when it comes to immersion or anything like this, is a lot of times we see stuff that is over-engineered, which is, it sometimes looks the coolest. It has the most buttons and flashing lights. But sometimes the simplest stuff is actually the best. And so that's something always also in the back of our mind when we're trying to think of heat reuse or other projects like this. So
simple, yeah, we've come to this very similar conclusion that the landfills, it's really low tech in most cases, because you're not talking about massive amounts of megawatts. And I'm pleased to hear you say that it's fun too, because I remember the first time that I was on a landfill. I don't know about you, Adam, but I just had this moment of, how cool is this? You're turning waste, you're turning trash into digital gold. This is alchemy. You're turning pollution, and you're using pollution as a fuel source. You're solving an environmental problem whilst also solving a problem for Bitcoin mining companies about decentralization of the network, access to cheap power. It's beautiful. The maths, the chemistry, the engineering, the mathematics, the financial models all come together, and you're feeding off, your feedstock is basically the consumption-fueled waste of a large economy, which generally is kept out of mind, out of sight, where no one looks at, and now you're finding something productive you can do with it. It's just incredible, and it is a lot of fun if you enjoy the engineering and the physics of it.
Yeah, I think it's there's a lot of overlap with like the ingenuity, the love to try new things type of the Bitcoin community. You know, there's a person on my team who joined and was so funny. They submitted an expense report to me for approval, and they were going to a landfill conference. It was just so funny to see, you know, within ourselves, a Bitcoin mining company. You know, this is months ago. A landfill conference ticket. And I reached out jokingly and said, you know, when you joined us, did you ever expect to be having these sort of expenses? And we laughed. But I said, no, seriously, like, you know, let me know if this isn't interesting to you, because I hate to be asking you to go to these landfill conferences if it isn't why you joined Marathon. But, you know, it was the opposite. The response I heard was, no, I want to do this. This is groundbreaking. This is hard. And it's fun. I don't know, it's, like I said, that's what gets us out of bed in the morning.
It's super exciting. My daughter, who's 15, her teachers at school were having a strike one day, which just happened to be the day that I was going to a landfill. So I said, hey, you're studying environmental science at school. Why don't you come with me? You'll learn more about environmental science visiting this landfill than you will do whatever you're doing at the moment. And she just absolutely loved it. And she sat down for a good couple of hours as we were talking through financials and the business case for why they were doing power generation. Then we actually saw it in action, and she was just in her happy place because there's something about the magic of seeing this wasted energy that you can't see, which is causing pollution, seeing all the pipes, seeing the compressors, seeing the blowers, seeing the generators, and then doing the maths on how much money they were earning, in their case, selling it back to the grid. Was just astonishing to her. So, look, I think if you're looking to, as a career development and as a branding for your company, as an encouraging, smart, innovative people, the more you're working just simply for that reason alone, it's a tremendous area to get into. But as you said, Adam, even if none of those reasons are true, it just stacks up economically because you're decentralizing the network. You're accessing cheap power. It's a regulatory hedge. And also it's improving the ESG narrative, not just for your own company, but for Bitcoin mining generally. And a rising tide lifts all ships.
Very well said. And on the point of Bitcoin and the ESG narrative kind of coming together in a way that I think people from the outside may not have expected. Adam, I just want to give you the opportunity before we wrap here to talk about the new site that Marathon announced in Paraguay. Using hydropower to mine Bitcoin. I think it's just, you know, Greenpeace is in shambles at this point. I think they're really struggling over there. So if you just want to put a bow on that one too, that would be great. And I think it would be a good place to wrap for this conversation as well.
Yeah, it seems so different mining from landfills versus mining in Paraguay, but under the surface, it's very similar. This is not us showing up to a utility and saying, we'd like to buy some power, please. This is us finding places in the world, opportunities, situations where Bitcoin mining is a unique solution. And Paraguay is, they have a lot of hydropower. I had the fortune of visiting the Itaipu Dam down there. Absolutely incredible, mind-blowing when you talk about cool stuff, seeing what humans can do. This was insane. So highly recommend. Anyway, they produce something like 32 terawatt hours of surplus energy every year. You know, they have all of this hydropower, but not that much use for electricity in the country yet. And so the natural question is, again, what do you do? You know, who else uses lots of power? Maybe big manufacturers. So much complexity to building a manufacturing plant in a foreign country, considering, you know, geopolitical things, taxes, imports, exports, et cetera, et cetera. Bitcoin mining is, again, a very simple, elegant solution to, yeah, we'd love to help balance this energy generation demand mismatch. And again, it's the utility is very welcoming in the sense of their country's growing rapidly and they have great ambitions. And in the back of their head is, oh, I don't want to promise you power that I can't give you for the next 100 years because that's what a manufacturing plant might look like. But instead, it's Bitcoin miners coming and saying, yeah, we want to take this power. And if there's ever an hour you need it back, if there's ever a day you need it back, we're happy to work together. And it was, I think, again, being in the room with the utility, when we said we want to partner with you, really took them aback. Because again, they're used to just selling power. And when they understood all the things that Bitcoin mining could do, the fact that we were location agnostic, so we can go to where the hydro dams are and where the energy is, so you don't have to build these expensive transmission cables all over the place to carry the electricity. The fact that we're modular, and so if you have a huge dam, we can take a ton of power. If you have a small dam, we can take a little amount of power. The fact that we're interruptible, and so again, they like to have that safety net of knowing that the miners can shut down. It's all of those things, and another really exciting, our second international foray here outside, the first being the UAE. And so excited on all these fronts that the decentralization of mining, whether it be geographically, whether it be by energy source, is happening, and I have full faith will continue to happen.
Phenomenal. Very well said. And I think what you have laid out here in this conversation just highlights that, and something that I know Charlie Schumacher on the Marathon team talked about in our last conversation was Bitcoin mining as a tool for the energy industry rather than just being a consumer. And I think that we're going to continue to unlock these use cases, you know, whether they be methane mitigation or ancillary services for the grid, heat recycling. There's just so much that Bitcoin mining can offer that really wasn't available prior. And I'll just point everyone again to this cashing in on trash report that Bitcoin Magazine Pro and Marathon put out. I mean, it just, like, if you know anyone who's operating a landfill, like, show them this. And I think you might not be able to change their mind about Bitcoin, the asset, but Bitcoin, the network, might be of use to them if they can stomach that. So, you know, a good resource to pass around. And yeah, I guess Daniel and Adam, I just want to thank you both again for coming on Bitcoin Magazine Spaces today. Is there anything else you guys want to leave our audience with before we go? Let them know maybe where they can find your work.
Yeah, absolutely. Just one final thought is that 35 landfills, mid-sized, currently venting their methane. You do Bitcoin mining on them, you have a carbon neutral Bitcoin network. That's how few landfills it takes. So I'll just leave with that thought in mind. You're not talking massive amounts. People can find me on at DS Batten on Twitter. That's probably the best way.
Yeah, and I have nothing else to say from me. And I was hoping, Daniel, you would mention that, because, and I hope people were listening, because that's one of those comments I remember, Daniel, the first time we were talking. You know, there's a few insights in life where it really stick with you. And I remember exactly where I was standing when I was talking to you on the phone when you said that comment. It was Ethereum was going through proof of stake stuff, merge. And when you said that the Ethereum has given up, sorry for poorly paraphrasing you, Daniel, but Ethereum has given up their ability to be a carbon negative good for the world. And I had never thought of it like that. It blew my mind. And so I'll just reiterate what Daniel said, is this is a huge opportunity for Bitcoin to be yet another driving force for good in the world through a different vector.
Fantastic. Well, I think that's a great place to leave it on. A nice subtle Ethereum dunk there on the end. I'm sure many in the audience will appreciate that. But yeah, I just want to thank everyone for joining us today. Daniel and Adam, as well as the Marathon team, thanks a lot. And we look forward to seeing you guys on Spaces again soon. Have a good one, everyone. And Chris, feel free to take us out of here.
Thanks so much, everyone. Thanks so much, everyone, for listening. Thank you to Daniel and Adam. I thought this conversation was really great. Make sure to go to bitcoinmagazine.com, check out the magazines that we have. We have a new one dropping shortly. Make sure to check out our End the Fed or the Fed Now merch that we've got going on. You can use code BMLive to get 10% off there. And looking forward to talking to everyone again soon. Have a good one, everyone.
Peace.
Thank you, Miami, for the last 3 years in this amazing city. The whole world shut down, but Miami welcomed us with open arms. We want to show Bitcoin to the whole world. We are taking the conference on the road to set the stage for Bitcoin in a new city, Nashville. Bitcoin 2024 is coming to Nashville in Tennessee, a city that is known as a music and freedom city. Bitcoin 2024 in Nashville from July 25th to 27th.